All right, this is Kenny here again, back with a Time Traveler's Guide to Worlds. It's going to be the year 2015. A couple things before I get started. First off, sorry for the delay. I said I was going to try and do this before the end of the year. It is the new year, our new silly year. I normally wouldn't do apologies for this and just tell you all to eat shit, but Eric always gets mad at me for apologizing for delays, so by apologizing for this, he'll be mad at me instead, which I prefer. Other than this, Claire keeps on yelling at me for doing vocal fry.
Use your diaphragm.
I don't understand what it means, so I'm probably gonna keep on doing that. If that bothers you, I don't know what to tell you. Other than that, thanks for all the positive feedback on the episode I did on themes in Netrunner. I'll probably do another one, but and I have an out rough sketch of one to do. It'll probably come after 2015. I need to do some research and read a couple books before I do it. Funnily enough, it turns out I'm actually just a huge nerd who likes to do book reports in my adult life. So apologies to all my teachers for whoever tried to teach me anything. For not being a good student when I was actually supposed to be. And since this is 2015, it's gonna be the same format. Go over the year, go over the top 16 deck lists, and then sort of have a summary of what did we learn from all of this. The big thing that'll probably end up being different this time is I think I have a lot more in depth to go over in terms of the year. So I'll probably end up splitting this out into two episodes. They'll release them close together and probably recording about one take. All right, so to start off, the other thing I want to do is give some character, like where was I throughout all of this? So as I talk about store champion season, regional season, national season, and then worlds, I will talk about where was I and what was I doing, just because give some flavor. So anyway, so in 20 Yeah, at the end of 2014, about when Worlds was happening that year, I moved to New York City. And then at the tail end of 2014, I started going to meetups, though they weren't that crowded. And I went to a couple of GNKs, and then store championship season started up. And I remember being like, I remember going to like a meetup or a GNK, and there was like 20 something people there, and it was pretty wild. We're constantly getting 16 and felt like, fairly it was fun to do these GNKs. And I also was like not that great at the time. So it was like I felt like winning a GNK felt pretty good. Ended up winning one in like February or something after going to like three or four. And so I remember this time really fondly. Like one thing in particular I remember, Chris Hinkes was playing Vamp Kit, and I would bring all these different decks and he would just like vamp me because my deck was like not fundamentally well built enough that he could just sit there and click Mopus and then vamp me and then I would be doomed. And I was like, I remember playing Mushin Blue Sun where you like off the grid and then Mushin and then have a stack like Chrisium or Caprice on HQ to keep them out, to keep your off the grid online, and then Mushin as like a value card to let you score 5/3 out of hand, and then bounce the off the grid back. But it was pretty bad against Vamp Kit, and so that's one thing that really got me to start playing better decks because sort of you got to play a good deck to beat that deck. And at some point over this period of time, I moved from playing like janky decks that I found on Netrunner DB to playing just MBN Fast Advance. And I think one of the other big things that happens, I would describe this as the year of Dan. He basically started streaming post Worlds, and then all throughout the year would stream Netrunner content, usually Octagon, and sort of would randomly here and there, and would just like play games on Octagon, which is like the way you played online back then. And they were really valuable streams. They were really informative. He was like one of the best players, or the best player, arguably. And that's who was like there telling you what he thought was good, why it was good, how to play in various situations. And it was also like pretty funny. I remember a memorable quote was one time he said, "Whereas a bonkers Bay Grid Teresa Dinga's campaign. He's a very silly guy. You can go back and watch them. A lot of them are on YouTube, Media Hacker. And I watched a couple, and it was like, oh man, the throwbacks to the noises, and just like Octagon was like manual, so like moving the servers around. Like there, I remember like you'd make like 3 servers at the start of the turn, and then like sometimes you'd be like, oh boy, now I need to make a bunch more. And I think one of the other things that happened that I think is notable is like sometime in 2015, there was like the first iteration of inclusivity fights on the StimHack forums. And this is like a thing that's gonna arise throughout Netrunner and not always resolved in like a great fashion. But I think Dan really like spoke up and told people to like cut it out and not be like shitheads about it, and to like, you know, no, we have to like take being inclusive seriously, and we can't just like free speech or whatever, or like blah 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 blah. And I think that was like a pretty important thing to have like one of the prominent people in the community to be like, no guys, like you got to take this stuff seriously. Yeah, so that was like some of the meta content from the year not related to the game. And so now I'm going to move into sort of talking about a quick recap of like where the actual Netrunner meta was at the end of 2014. So basically it was corp favored. There was basically the three-pronged attack of NEH, RP, and PE at sort of like tier one. And then additionally, Blue Sun was like kind of there. And those were like the top 4 decks was NEH, RP, Blue Sun, and PE. And PE was like very popular in the continental Europe. Where NEH and RP were sort of like popular elsewhere, and then Blue Sun was just kind of Timmy. And in my opinion, I think RP was the best deck, though NEH was the most common one, and they're the two most powerful. And I had started playing then and was playing a bunch in Octagon, and PE kind of got found out. You know, the list became open. The sort of problem with the Mushin, the lacking the Mushin trap threat of Min's list made it so that it was a lot, people really figured out how to play it, and it kind of got a lot worse, and probably like a couple months later was probably tier 2 instead of tier 1. And then so sort of like end of the year, I would say that NEH and RP were the two best decks. The one thing you could do is you could cut the Scorch to play like 2 Overriders, and you didn't really know which of those 2 versions it was on. And on the runner side, there was basically Andy at number 1. And then second was prepaid Kate, and then like a sort of noise was in a distant third. This was basically the options for the most part. And I think Andy was definitely the best deck at this point at 2014 Worlds. But it was halfway through Lunar, and Lunar is going to have a couple of packs to come out that I think they like get released between Worlds, and sort of I think the last one gets released in January or maybe just by the end of the year. And so to start off, the first one was All That Remains. All That Remains contains a bunch of impressive cards. On the runner side, and probably the most important of these, was Lady. So Lady is like a barrier breaker, and up until this point, prepaid Kate was using Corroder or Snowball, which basically meant you had to Atman at 4, otherwise you were paying a million to break Eli, and then you were also paying a ton. You'd be like paying like 2 or 3 credits to break Well of Static. Every deck had Eli, and it was just sort of a problem, you know. And like Snowball's 5 to break Eli. And now this card, basically, you install it, and then you get to break Eli 4 times for 1 credit. And then one of the biggest things that happened out of this is to play around Lady, the deck got reworked to include Scavenge, and so basically the second Lady was free. And you additionally ran Cyber Cipher, and which comboed really well with Scavenge, and you could efficiently attack every server. And it was also playing double legwork, was sort of got solidified as like the main way to do it. And all of this basically made it much more able to attack NEH, and I think pretty much with this pack, it goes to probably the best runner deck. largely because it's the only one that can really contend with any age. There were two other dogs, which I'm only really mentioning because this was one of the big meme decks, as people are always talking about the dog deck where you play all the dog breakers. The other two are extremely bad. I think the criminal one ends up seeing a tiny bit of play, but they're all very bad and you're not happy about it. As opposed to Lady, which is sort of one of the best barrier breakers in the game. And a lot of people thought Lady was broken for a while because of how good it was, so kind of looking at it now, it's not that great. And on the corpse side, I think there are like three interesting cards. One is Daily Business Show, which was sort of immediately recognized as very good, and was sort of a powerhouse asset. It went in both RP and NEH. I think after this, like two Daily Business Show became pretty standard in MBN and really gave you a lot more sort of just value assets. It was sort of the start of the value asset era, because before this you were playing like pad and marked accounts. And then there's also Sansan as like the other thing, but Sansan was kind of like a power win con as opposed to like a value asset. And then there's also Executive Boot Camp. It enabled this deck called Boot Camp Glacier, which was never great, but it was like a Blue Sun Glacier deck where you use the fact that Executive Boot Camp could fetch Adonis campaigns to sort of actually have money in that deck that was more consistent, which was a big problem with the Blue Sun deck. It was not a great deck. I played it a bunch. I lost a lot. I was admittedly not that great at it, but it was just not as strong as the other options. Then one of the other cards is Hostile Infrastructure, which is kind of lurking in the background, and sort of a card that we now recognize as pretty good that really didn't have a fit yet. And a lot of that was because at this point in time, there wasn't a ton of like amazing playable assets. And the end of Lunar was kind of the start of just the value asset era, where they printed things about as good as Pad Campaign. And Pad Campaign was basically the only good value asset printed since the core set, including the core set. Marked accounts being like the second best one, which is kind of like a slightly worse pad campaign. The next pack is the Source, which sort of builds on this theme. It contains Turtlebacks, which I think is probably the best naked asset that's printed up until this point. DBS and Turtlebacks are the two in contention. And so we suddenly see a shift and a possible shift in the game where like, hey, like you can actually build like a horizontal deck because there's a bunch of good cards. And people kind of start to do it. I looked up some of the old decks. People play the first IG, which comes out in this pack. It was built by like Timmy. And one of the interesting things about this deck is that it had 14 ice. You can look it up. John D'Alessandri posted it. It's called Timmy is a Mad Genius. It's kind of interesting. The most interesting thing I think about is like the 14 ice count, which is like, at this point in time, just like didn't realize how little you need ice in a way we like understand later in Netrunner. But it sort of hadn't really reached a critical mass of like cards to make like a pure asset value deck work. Notably, the way you won was with Mushin and Ronin, which is kind of like a pretty slow win con. You know, it takes you a while to get it out. The other thing it was played in is it starts to get played in NEH. With both there's the horizontal, what's called near pad variant, where you're like, oh, I'm spamming on a bunch of remotes and you might hit snare and then lose, or you might not run an Astro and then lose. Though really most of these decks you could actually just run everything and never lose. But it also got a little bit of play in sort of just like a value asset in the regular NEH. But I think generally sort of it was considered less good than an Architect to run two of these, and it was definitely less good than Eli, and definitely less good than half a Biotic. I think one of the other interesting cards on the corpse side was Marcus 1.0, which was like a two sub barrier, Bioroid barrier, and a lot of people were like, oh wow, like this is like an Eli, and sort of it kind of is, except it's bad, and it's sort of a lesson in how a little bit of number changes are terrible. This is a terrible card that you should never play. But it's kind of interesting that like a lot of people thought it was going to be good at Eli, which I think is mainly interesting, and it shows you like how dominant Eli was at the time and how much Eli was seen as the best ice in the game, that people were like, this shitty Eli might be good. And then on the runner side, probably the most important card here is Earthrise Hotel. Earthrise Hotel does like two things. It's neutral draw, and Criminal uses this, and Anarch uses it a little bit. Like, it goes into Noise. People were playing it in that over Wildsides. And just sort of like a way for people to have access to draw without paying influence, other than because all the draw cards were pretty much entirely in Shaper. The other thing that's about Earthrise Hotel is it has the ritzy subtype. There's a famous story where Gustavo, aka Innoscore, said that he was playing Netrunner and someone came up to him and he's like, "Oh, I used to play this game. Let me see what you're doing." And he looked at his cards and he looked at Earthrise Hotel and he's like, "Ritzy, yeah, that's why that game died." Which is just like a very silly story. And I think this like tells you how untrustworthy people are when if you ask them, "Yeah, like why did you stop playing?" "Oh, because of the ritzy subtype." Yeah, that game died because of the ritzy subtype. That's what happened. But I just think it's a funny story. And that's the end of the lunar cycle, which brings us to Order and Chaos. Order and Chaos was the third big box. And Order and Chaos is at like a pretty important point in Netrunner where it's Anarch and it's Wayland. Anarch is the worst faction on the side in the game. And Wayland is the worst faction on the corpse side. And so we have two previous instances of sort of like the big box really solving a faction's issue. Creation Control basically successfully made Shaper good, and Honor and Prophet had made the worst faction, Jentechian, put into tier one with RP and PE. And so we'll talk a little bit about how we did this time. We'll start with Anarch. I think the two best cards in Anarch in this box are the two IDs, Max, which is draw on a ton of value. One of the things that I remember cracking up about, and one of the first times I remember being like, "Oh wow, like some of these people on these forums don't know what they're talking about." There's people talking about putting SMC in map in Max, and I was like, "No, that's it's." And they're like, "Well, you have clone chip to get if it gets in the bin, and you have SMC if it doesn't go in the bin, so you always have good value." And it's like, Max is like the only deck where with SMC, the thing you want might not like in a regular deck. If you draw SMC, the thing you want is either already in the game because you've drawn it already, or it's in your deck. With Max, you can draw SMC and you haven't seen the thing you want, and it's not in your deck. But this is a really powerful card, and people sort of immediately start to build stuff with it. The other is Val, which is like mainly considered to have potential at this point in time because of Blackmail, which is a really powerful card, and I think immediately sees like a little put out of play, but isn't like groundbreaking or anything. Outside of that, I think the biggest playable card, or the biggest non-ID card, is I've Had Worse, which is sort of a mediocre draw card, but it's also built in kill protection. And it can often get absurd value against things like Pop. So if your opponent is running incremental like net damage, this gets really valuable. You can like bounce it off of Tsurugi. And I think it's at its best versus Jinteki, where it really lets you counter the click compression they have. They're like, "Hey, like you have five cards in hand. I'm gonna like lay out 8 damage worth of net damage, and you also have to install a thing." But then you get them with I've Had Worse. And it also basically was a pretty reasonable kill protection against Scorched, and also just sort of, hey, even if you can't do this thing, it's an okay draw card. So it's like a pretty strong card that's generally seen play in Anarch. The other stuff that I think are pretty good are is Eater, which really became turns Siphon Anarch from like not jank. The deck type archetype was called Anatomy of Anarch. Which was like never great. I think the best was like Steven Willey got top 16 at 2013 Worlds with it. And Eater sort of lets you land siphons way more consistently. And then the other thing was the Cutlery, which are basically knifed spoons and forks, which let you sort of destroy ice, especially with combination eater. In terms of their impact, knife sort of is immediately good and goes into everything. One of the big things you do with knives is you can kill Eli by clicking through it, which is pretty good value. And you don't need to install the breaker, and oftentimes you can never install your sort of breaker in the Eli world. As well as sort of there's a bunch of big value targets like curtain wall. It sort of really lets you crush Blue Sun with D4, David and Eli. The other ones like are okay. People experimented with like ones more focused on them, but knifed is sort of the one that is basically gonna see play in regular decks in Anarch forever, whereas the other ones are sort of only going in specialized ones. And then there's a bunch of other like fringe playables that would show up over time. Progenitor, Amped Up, Hive Minds, and sort of they do some stuff, they're okay. Progenitor is just kind of a value card. Amped Up lets you do some combo stuff, as is Hive Minds. Then one of the other big memes at the time was Memstrips, aka Meme Strips, which Dan was said was terrible, and people loved putting it in decks because people love the idea of building this giant super rig that can destroy everything when really just sort of like it's pretty bad. It just sort of tempos you, and you really don't need that much memory, especially at the point in time where Grimoire was the only good console. And I think there's a couple of interesting things to note about the Anarch side. One, the best Anarch idea at the time was noise, and there isn't a ton for noise here. Sort of Hive Minds is the best noise card here, and it doesn't really go in noise that much. It's more of a combo card, which I think is a pretty big success in terms of really fleshing out other possibilities for the faction rather than just the noise virus faction. And I think overall, it pushed the faction up to like tier 1.5, whereas previously, like noise was tier 2, and the rest of the faction was like bad. Instead, now sort of like the rest of the faction is like almost to the best. Like it's like one or two good cards from the best, but like realistically, it's sort of like not the best thing, but it's a lot better than it was. And this is expressed in like Siphon Max, which I think is like the easiest thing to build, where basically you draw a bunch of cards. You siphon a million times, and then you have Levy to like flip it for. And sort of like one of the big things about siphon decks is, hey, if you pay 10 to siphon them and you're both broke because of this, if you have max going, you're sort of getting a card over time, which is a huge advantage, the less resources each player has in play. And so max really takes advantage of the gameplay of a siphon spam deck. And then the other big sort of Anarch deck that emerges out of this is Regas Max, which is basically Dandragenio makes it. It's basically you play good cards, you use Max's ability and clone chip to set up super fast and consistently, as well as just having a ton of parasites throughout the game. And his deck was like not that great. Dan was really good. But the big flaw of the deck was it was really relying on Katie Jones. I looked up the list. I think it should just have been playing zero Katie Jones. And I think it actually could have been a really good deck. I actually played a ton of Max, though I was a little bit goofy. But I would just play like a Parasite spam deck, but I think somewhere in between might have been the best thing. But yeah, not clicking Katie Jones is all I ever want to do. And then on the corpse side, we have Waitlands, which is, as I was saying, probably the worst corp faction at this point in time. And it does not get treated in this box like it's the worst faction. This is like a pretty bad pack overall. So we're going to start off with the only three good cards in it, which are the ideas. Gagarin, which ends up being super good and is maybe one of the best IDs ever printed, actually. But it just there isn't enough good assets to really make this work yet, so it doesn't really take off. There's Titan, which is basically kind of dumb but good, mainly for how it combos with Atlas. It's really the deck that puts a counter on Atlas, which is kind of just a nuts ability. But you really want to be fast advancing for this, and there just isn't enough in faction fast advanced tools to really support it. And there isn't going to be until Audacity comes out. And there's Argus, which is probably the best one at the time, but it was just, again, just like the faction just like didn't have enough good cards to make it like this work. Other than that, I think that the best card is probably Wyrmholm, Orion, or Government Takeover, which are just like really not that great. it's pretty bad. There's notably Traffic Accident, which is probably the single Wailing Corp card that sees the most play out of this. But it's entirely in MBN and is used to dodge I've Had Wars and just have more kill pieces, which is not a great thing for if you want Wayland to be good. Yeah, and there are some other notable cards in here are Mark Yale, Constellation Protocol, Builder, all very bad. And I think what happened with this is basically that early on, Wayland Tagenbag was one of the first functional decks. And I think people really overrated it because they're like, oh, this deck's really good. And it was actually just like one of the two ways you could win an early Netrunner. And it was actually the worst one of them. And it got to be the worst as people got better and better at Netrunner. And so I think as they were testing, like, oh, Wayland is like pretty close to good because we remember it being good. So we can't go too nuts and we can't sort of support his existing stuff. So we got to go like this advanceable ice route. And advanceable ice, first off, just isn't that fun. And I think that really made it hard to make the power level good because I'm sure there was like some iteration of the stuff that was pretty good. And people were just like, oh, my opponent just like advanced their ice. And then I couldn't run at all because all their servers cost and the game took forever for me to win. And you know, every server costs a million credits to run. But yeah, I think this, the Wayland side of this pack was a pretty big failure, and the Anarch side was pretty good. Though I think one of the most important Corp card that got printed in is Cyberdex Virus Suite, which I think is a really well-designed card. One, sort of viruses are ubiquitous enough across Netrunner as just like a card type that it's rarely a dead card, and the way in which it interacts with different kinds of factions, viruses, or like different deck archetypes, viruses is very interesting. For example, it works one way against Clot, works another way against Medium, it works another way against Turtle, it works another way against Parasite. And what you want to be doing in all these scenarios is very different. And like how you use it, where you put it, whether you use its res ability, whether you use it as a trap, whether you hold out for a blowout play, is very interesting and very, it depends on like what is going on in the game. And so I think it's a pretty cool card. Yeah, Wayland though, man, it was rough. And so that sort of is about everything that happens before the store championship meta. And what we see with all of the end of Lunar and the Sword Championship meta, the meta sort of looks like Kate is number one, and then Andy Sucker, sort of Max, and Stealth Andy are sort of not quite as good, but you can play them and probably win a store championship, and you're not really like hurting yourself that much. As well as like Noise is probably tier two. Is a little bit worse than all of those, but is also fine. But though Cade is clearly the best deck. And Stealth Andy, I haven't really talked about, but it's basically Switchblade is the Stealth Breaker in Criminal, which is pretty good, and it really lets you crush RP by efficiently breaking all their big sentries. And then the Corp side, at this point in time, NEH and RP are basically tier one. Wayland, blue people are not really playing Blue Sun. It's just fallen off. It's not that great. And then you can also play P or HB Fast Advance, but they're not as good, and there isn't really justification for playing either of them over NEH or RP. And then I think I spent a lot of time trying to figure out where exactly I would put this in because it's sort of it's a deck that is going to appear a lot in Netrunner, but is never going to be that great. But it's always going to be a thing you start to see it starts showing up, which is CI 7-point combo. I think Dan wins the store championship this year with it. He, you know, if you look at his old stream, he loves playing it. And this is like the start of where we see like basically about what the final deck ends up looking like, sort of the combo cards you have in it, the combos are figured out, and sort of what has happened over time is the ice changes, and as newer econ cards get printed, they get put in and it gets better. But basically, if you're not familiar, CI7 is a combo deck where you basically draw a bunch of cards and then in one turn you score 7 points by power shutdowning your deck. And then you basically use Jackson Howard to put three cards on the top of your deck and then play Accelerated Diagnostic. So you have three Jacksons, you have three Jackson Howards. And so basically, you can play three times. You get to play Accelerated Diagnostics for the exact three cards you want. And this lets you pretty easily do a 7-point combo. And it's pretty powerful, but it's got a couple of big problems. One, the way noise works really disrupts you. So you have extremely hard time winning noise because basically noise, when you shuffle these three cards back onto the top of your deck, noise can clone chip in a virus and you have to mill one of them. And so the combo is actually pretty tight, and so it's pretty hard to play around noise. Second thing, Siphon Spam kind of crushes you. Your econ isn't that good, and so you really can't afford to be siphoned a bunch of times. You aren't fast enough to really beat it. Though notably, like Siphon Crim doesn't have enough, but it's really the new Siphon Spam maxes that really crush it. It's also not that fast, and so kind of just like, everyone gets a decent amount of accesses against it, and it's playing 2/5/3s, and so if those ever get stolen, you basically just lose. And then Leela was initially a problem, though they eventually figure out how to beat Leela, both by just comboing in two parts or by comboing through Leela. And it's kind of like, it's probably going to be like, it's never the deck you should bring to a tournament for like a long period of time, but it's kind of always there and always a thing that like you can bring if you really want to, and a lot of people won't know what to deal with it. But if you like get a good player on like one of these decks that beat you have no chance. Yeah, and so I remember the Sword Championship season really fondly. I remember I played Blue Sun off the grid and Gabe at one, and I got crushed by an NEH and was mad. I remember that game, and then I hit him with the old punitive Counter Strike, which is was pretty bad at that point in time. Corp just didn't really have the econ to ever kill it, though arguably I think it's never been great. And I ended up winning one by playing NEH and Max. My memory of that was NEH was just kind of not fair to bring to a store championship. It was just, and like I think that people were not like crazy competitive about it, and so like at the store champ level, people were mostly just playing their pet decks. And a couple of people were playing the meta decks like I was. But for the most part, I would say most people were just like, hey, I've been working on this Quetzal deck or something like that. And one of the things I remember about it was like really trying to beat like the local tryhards. I really wanted to beat Elad and Hinkies. And sort of beating them really motivated me to like go to regionals after that. But yeah, I remember I wasn't like sure if I wanted to go to regionals, but Sword Championship seasons really work as like a feeder into it. Yeah, and that brings us to the Sansan cycle, which is kind of an interesting cycle. I remember it had these like themed packs where like every pack was like a place in Sansan, and like one of them was like the university, one of them was like a area where like they did all the genetics, and had these like cool themed packs that really discussed the area. I remember one of the inserts had a picture of Pop Art. the alt art pop up in it, and I really don't like that alt art. It's very distressing to me, which I guess is kind of the point, but also I just didn't like it, and so I never opened the pack insert again after that point. I was just like, you know what, I'm not really enjoying these anymore. I'm just here for the game. I don't care that much about the theme. But I think the theme of Sansan was pretty cool to see them go through that, and I think some people appreciated them. They're like, at this point in time, I stopped. But I was also betrayed by that alt art pop-up. And so the first pack is the Valley. The most important card in the Valley is Clot. So Clot was actually spoiled, I think, believe, during Worlds 2014. It was unofficially spoiled, so a bunch of people knew about it and knew it was coming. And it's a really important card because, as we saw in Worlds 2014, NEH Fast Advance and Astro were the most powerful things. And with this, there's suddenly a tool to fight against Fast Advance. You can use it as like a tempo card, where you just sort of like, hey, you can still Fast Advance, which is sort of not terribly powerful, but people kind of do it in noise. But the bigger thing you can do is you can use it with Clone Ship to basically say, hey, you can't Fast Advance at all, which completely changes sort of the balance of Fast Advance and really sees NEH get seriously nerfed. And I think when this happened, a lot of people were not sure how powerful it would be. And the answer it turned out to be is very powerful. Clot really did a number against NEH. The other big card was Adjusted Chronotype, which is sort of a huge buff to Wildside's deck, because in the late game you no longer have the pretty significant downside. But Noise didn't really appear as a great deck yet, I think largely because this wasn't enough, and people, as we talked about a lot last time, didn't know about how important Lamprey was, as well as just not being all the cards that Noise needed to be good existing yet. And there are a couple of other like sleeper cards who ended up being highly relevant way later. Tech Startup, again, we've talked about a bunch how like there aren't, or we, I've talked about a bunch how like there just like weren't enough relevant asset cards yet. Like the asset power just wasn't really there yet. The other big one was Cortex Lock, which is a pretty interesting card. I think it's a pretty cool card, and ends up seeing a lot of play in really low ice deck, where it's incredibly powerful in decks that if you're just only installing like 5 or 6 ice, Cortex Lock is one of the best ice in the game, because the big weakness of Cortex Lock is if someone installs full mem, they can run through it for free. And if you don't have a ton of ice, the main thing that takes up mem are ice breakers, and so a lot of people won't. And with that pack, we actually get something called the SSCI, the StimHack Store Championship Invitational, which was an event run by StimHack, mainly by Dan. And the goal was basically, hey, anyone who had won a store championship can enter in, the idea of being like, hey, we want to have more big competitive tournaments, and sort of a result of a lot of people in the competitive community feeling there wasn't enough competitive support for Netrunner and they wanted to make it. And it was pretty soon after the release of this pack, and so it was like the first major tournament in the post-Clot era. And it was 7 rounds of Swift into a top 16 cut all in one day. You can look up the tournament, which is pretty funny. You can see just like Dan lose his mind after like 15 hours of commentating. I think the last game, they're just excited for it to be over, and they're mad when sort of winners grand finals goes to game 2. The winner is RP. The best runner deck is Kate, and they were pretty demonstrate to be dominant. About half the Kates play Clot. NEH is off its throne. A decent chunk of people try and play it to make the cut, and lost. And then there's a decent amount of HP Fast Advance, which is sort of more resilient to Clot because it has better ice, and so you're more able to sort of score if Fast Advance is taken off the table, though you can still use Fast Advance. And HP Fast Advance is probably the second best deck at this point.
And there's some fun decks in it. There's Stark and Tully has two wild decks and comes in fourth. And has like this max personal workshop hive mind deck where basically you build up to a combo turn where you stimhack hive mind and a bunch of mediums out, and then you run R&D and you basically have super parasites and you medium for like 20 cards, which is a pretty cool deck. It's pretty janky and isn't that great, but and then sort of after this is regional season, and which sort of develops with this meta. And I think some of the things that develop over the regional season, which I attended my first regionals and I had a great time with it. I went to Cambridge where I was like 9-5, I think. I had some good games. I felt kind of robbed to miss the cut, but I also had to drive back to New York from Massachusetts afterwards, so it really wasn't the end of the world. And then I later went to the Philadelphia regionals. And I think two of the big things that develop in this meta over the course of the regional season are, one, Cambridge Regional, I remember having a great time. I went up with two other people from the New York City meta. Cal, who is the old guy who ran all the tournament organizer in New York and like ran all the tournaments, and I loved Cal. He was a terrible tournament organizer, and one thing about me is I love like things that are just kind of shit. Cal was a very nice guy, but he was just like, he would organize all the tournaments and he'd show up like half an hour late, and was just like never on time. And I think I remember staying with him for this tournament and we all drove up together and it was a blast. And we just like talked for like 3 hours about Netrunner, and it was like, that's like maybe some of my like favorite Netrunner moments are just being in a car with a bunch of people who obsessively love this game, and just talking about them all day. And I think Cal ended up quitting I think the next year, where basically he said he really wanted to attend a Worlds, but he also really liked X-Wing, and he decided he liked X-Wing more, so he was going to focus on that. And we ended up getting a new tournament organizer, who was Alex, aka The Internet, who was very good at doing what he did. And because of that, I did not appreciate him as much, even though he was objectively way better at everything, because I have a silly brain, and I love that Cal was always late for the tournaments. Alex did a great job of keeping that NYC tournament scene alive and was on time and organized events. He was a great dude, but I miss Cal. I think also partially just because he was the guy who was running all the tournaments when I first arrived. That's regional season. I played a max deck, and I played HP Fast Advance in both of them. And then I ended up I got fourth at Philadelphia Regional, which I was pretty happy with. I just kept on winning. I remember I played Dan in the cut. I had a great game against Chris Hankies, who I'd played against a ton. And I had a no ice HP opening, and I did some wild stuff, and I fired an ABT that I installed naked because I knew he was a Mopus deck, so he can't really afford to check naked remotes. And I fired an ABT and missed, and then ended up still managing to come back, and it was I remember that game was really good. And I played against Dan, and I remember the funny thing about Dan was basically he was just like, this was before vaping got banned indoors, and so he was just like stress vaping and buffing, you know, puffing huge clouds of smoke. But yeah, I think really fond memories of this regional season. And I'll talk a little bit about the decks that develop more, which is, I think NEH basically ends up coming back as like a deck when Beblum wins to Philadelphia Regionals, and basically he realized you could put CBS and beat a lot of stuff, and I think that was like the first time NEH really came back before I think other than that people were just kind of like, you can play NEH and hope you don't meet a Clock 8, but Clock 8 being pretty much standard. And also Butcher Shop develops and a lot and is more compelling than it was in a lot of ways before, because you had a lot of because you have a lot of ways to win outside of Fast Advance, which really helps it. And then the next pack is Breaker Bay, which I think the one of the biggest notable set of cards are Turing Crick, which was sort of this, there was a cycle of four of them. Those were the good ones. There was Marimatu and what's the other one I'm blanking? Oh, and Gutenberg. Gutenberg is pretty bad. Marimatsu is like pretty mediocre, though it sees like a tiny bit of play. Crick is really good, and basically just immediately slots into RP and makes it stronger. And Turing is like a pretty good value ice that also slots into HB. Nothing really groundbreaking, but just some more good ice. And there's also Career Fair, which is basically, it leads to something called L4J Wizard, which was co-created, or Looking for Job Wizard, because he's going to the career fair, which is co-created by Spags and Stephen Woolley. And I think Spags gets second in Madison. And I think this is really the first Regas Wiz deck, which is a pretty important thing in Netrunner's history. We're just like, hey, this is like a good stuff Anarch deck that uses Wizard's good ability, and it's running Earthrise, and I believe I've had worse. It's not running Inject, or which is I think interesting, which I think is really what becomes standard in later Wizard decks, and basically you run Liberated, Daily Cast, and Earthrise is the targets for that, and has a lot more money. And then one of probably the biggest cards is the titular Breaker Bay Grid, which is not really a huge player in the regional meta. I think HB Glacier is not great, though some people start playing around with it, but is sort of an important card in Netrunner. The next pack is an extremely important pack, is an extremely unimportant pack. It contains, I think, basically two cards. One, Oaktown Renovation, which is a very good card. Unfortunately, Waylon still sucks. I think this is like the best card Waylon gets until Audacity, but it just, the faction is just really far behind. And the other card is Netrunner Eyes, which is important basically because it fixes the Yogg problem that the Lotus Field problem that Yogg had. And it buffs Regis, Anarch, and really makes him a lot stronger. It's also just like a pretty reasonable value card. But it isn't like a crazy game changer, but it is a good card that fits into Regis, Anarch, and makes it a little bit better. The next pack is Underway, which contains one of the most important cards that's going to be printed in the cycle. Probably one of the two most important cards behind, alongside Clot, which is Faust. Faust is probably one of the top two or three Netrunner cards of all time. I think Siphon is really the only runner card that's more impactful from it. And it's basically a huge immediate buff to Noise, who had trouble breaking ice without Parasite. You know, the basic Noise plan is, hey, just Parasite everything, clone chip, deja vu it back. But you kind of, oftentimes there's Architects or other stuff and you kind of don't have great solutions. And so this is a pretty big buff to Noise, as well as gets Street Peddler, which is a very good value Anarch card. It's draw, which is really something Anarch was missing and gets over the course of this cycle. It's great in Noise, where basically you have a bunch of cards you're fine throwing away, like Aesops, your extra Aesops, your extra Wildsides, your extra Chronotypes. And I think these represent a pretty huge buff to Noise, though we'll also be seeing in other stuff. Faust and a ton of stuff, and Street Peddler and a lot of Anarch decks, just as a value card. The other interesting card is Hyperdriver, which is like the first big combo runner card. And people also put it in Procovate just for value. But the big thing it does is it sort of makes runner decks like viable, where you combo decks viable, where you can take a bunch of clicks in one turn and do crazy things. The most notable combo deck is Diaper, which is basically, which I'll talk about later as it still needs some cards, but I remember people were experimenting with a Bag Biter combo deck, where you basically mope is a ton of time and then make a huge combo run with Notorieties and a bunch of multi-access and use Bagbiter to combined with Game Day to sort of draw through your entire deck. This all brings us to National Season, which is I think I'll talk about two Nationals. First I'll talk about UK Nats, which happens first. And it's won by RP and Kate by Alex White, aka Vinegary Mink. And he wins. His RP deck has a, his Kate deck has a pretty good name, which is Count Wongula, because he plays Vamp instead of the standard Parasite in prepaid Kate, which is an interesting twist, I think, because he thought that basically, hey, you're mainly trying to win the matchup against RP, and Glacier's bad against Vamp. I don't actually totally buy this. I think the Parasite's pretty good, but it's an interesting call. And Kate is sort of the dominant deck throughout this whole meta. There's some other interesting decks in here. There's a bunch of like fringy decks. Quinns, who's probably the most important person in Netrunner in terms of getting people to play and being a public spokesperson, gets in seventh with his custom Gagarin deck. This deck is a little goofy. It's got only 8 assets, only 2 pad campaigns. It's a little goofy. It doesn't seem great. I think he's trying to play a lot of like never advanced games, but it really isn't that amazing. It wasn't like terrible. There is Edinburgh Waylands, run by Seamus, who got fourth, which is not great. He's splashing for Ghost Branch Danis. It's like a functional Wayland deck, which is just not that great. But he's a very good player who will show up more, and I think he gets more serious about his deck selection as Netrunner goes along and cuts out doing things like playing Stealth Kit. And one of my favorite decks is Waldemar HB, which has a great run-up by Chrisman from TeamerCast. And it's Mandiguary Upgrades HB that just has a ton of money but doesn't have Breaker Bay Grade and instead uses pads. And I don't... It's just kind of silly. It's, like, fine. HB, like, good stuff is basically always been a fine deck, though it's not the best deck. And then Gen Con happens. And there's two very important things that happen at Gen Con. First is the actual tournament. Lucas Lee wins Gen Con with Kate and NEH. Lucas Lee wins a ton of stuff over the course of a year, is a very good player, and then I think only really played Netrunner for like a year and a half, and basically went back to Magic, which I think he just had a more serious competitive scene, more tournaments, and was really what he liked, even though he liked Netrunner a fair amount. But was an incredibly good player. I watched his games. They're on TeamerCast. They're really good. He's a very good player. I thought he played very well. And then the second place is Pacer with Noise. And RP, I believe. And this Noise deck, I think, is like one of the first really big placements of Noise. He does some interesting stuff in it. He doesn't play Hedge Fund. I think he plays Daily Cast. Just sort of Max Deja Vu. Is playing Lamprey. And this is like really the first sort of modern Noise deck. And it's a very good deck. I mean, really shows that sort of Faust and Chronotype have pushed Noise into Tier 1. I mean, overall in these decks, every faction is represented, though Krim is probably the worst off. Wayland has more representation, but Andy and Krim, the old dominant faction has really fallen off the map at this point. I think there's one or two in Gen Con, and Dave Hoyland gets, I think, like sixth with Leela. Wayland has like a couple of decks. They're kind of fringy. They're definitely not the best decks here. And it's really NEH and RP versus Noise and Kate as like the two best decks on each side, with a bunch of other stuff you can kind of play, but those are very clearly the best things. And then the other big thing that happens in Gen Con is something called Netrunner Christmas, which is at Gen Con, the last two data packs of the cycle, as well as Data and Destiny, the last big box, all get released at the same time. I think like Data and Destiny didn't even have spoilers for it yet. And so I remember when this happened, and I was at like work, and someone was like, holy shit, we have scoops for everything. And someone like posted pictures of it and like all the cards, and we were all like on and I got messaged about it, and I was like, really, I was looking at the forums all day, and it was a really exciting time. And I would say it was a very exciting day, but like as a PR thing, it had some issues, which is that like I was so excited by Data and Destiny, like barely even listened to the last two packs, and there was like too much stuff to really process at that point, whereas like a more delayed thing is a way more productive way for like the company to release it. And it also, like, they had this stuff, but these things didn't end up getting released for a decent chunk of time. The box didn't end up getting released until like basically Worlds. I think in the US it was like 2 weeks before Worlds, but in like in the UK it was literally the week of, and people, like a bunch of people didn't get it. They were scrambling to get cards. It kind of fractured the testing between in-person testing and sort of online testing for Worlds, because sort of like, hey, do you test with all the stuff we can actually get a copy of, or do you test with the thing that's going to be active for Worlds? And Lucas tells everyone it'll be legal for Worlds, but then like it just keeps on not getting a release, and people are like starting to become not sure it'll even happen. And it was also just like a huge asymmetry in like access to it. I remember like a couple people in our meta had it because they like went to Gen Con, and a bunch of people didn't, and it was just like, what do we play? Like, we can't really play GNK. It was not a great idea. And it also ends up being that sort of nothing new gets spoiled for about 6 or 7 months after this, which is a pretty incredible amount of time. And I think is a thing that ends up hurting the Netrunner community a lot, because I think new stuff and new products and new things to build with sustains the community and sustains interest in a lot of ways. And there's some other nats after this, but that's like, those are the two most important nats. Apologies to like the continental Europe.
And so now I'm going to talk about the packs from that were released on Netrunner Christmas. So first off, I'm going to talk about the two data packs, the last two of the Santan cycle, which are Old Hollywood and Universe of Tomorrow. I'm gonna cover them together because they came out at the same time and basically affected everything at the same time. And I think there was a couple of pre-Worlds nats they affected, but basically it was all one meta after this point. So I think one of the first cards is Team Sponsorship, which was pretty quickly recognized as a strong card. Basically, it fit nicely into a lot of decks. It was just a lot of value. People were playing an HP Fast Advance and thought it made a pretty good buff. It was mainly HP Fast Advance, I think. A couple playing in an MBN, but not really. Next was Exploder Balooza, which was a pretty big buff to Butcher Shop. Basically, previously you were running NAPD and they could just not steal it if you're in mid-season's range. Now with Explodapalooza, you can, if they like run and check a Explodapalooza early, it's pretty easy to land in mid-season's and kill them. And I think it was a pretty big buff overall. And on the topic of Butcher Shop, the next card is Harpsichord, which is basically a new ID that people quickly figured out was pretty strong in MBN kill deck. Basically, there's like two tricks you can do with Harpsichord. One, you're like pretty resilient to multi-axis. Two, you can do something called like the Harpsichord Fast Advance, where you just install two agendas. And that was like a pretty useful ability, as well as you can play more agendas and throw a bunch in archives. And with like Explodapaloozas, you can really like punish a runner and make it hard for them to run, which lets you get around some of the issues of running a ton of agendas. And then on the flip side of this, to counter some of this stuff, the runner gets Film Critic, which is a very strong hate card. It's good against Harpsichord. It's also good against Mid-Seasons and the Future Perfect, which are pretty two pretty big win cons. People also install it to steal NAPD, but that's generally a pretty bad value. Basically, if you think about it, the first time you steal an NAPD, it's 3 clicks and a credit, because you need the click and the credit to install it, and then the 2 clicks to clear it. So basically, if you just spent 3 clicks taking credits, that's going to be better than a Film Critic. But the big thing is it really works as a hate card. Then there is some key components of what became referred to as the Fuckboy Starter Pack, which are Wireless, Napoleon, and Paparazzi. Basically, these comboed with Fall Guy and DLR, as well as Siphon to sort of push Tag Me, like a new kind of DLR tag deck, where basically you take tags and then you win with DLR. And so I think the original Anarch Tag Me deck was an Enemy of Anarch, which did use DLR, but it kind of just used it as a tempo hit, where basically you try and siphon them down and then spend every turn installing like a DLR or Joshua B and just force them to take two, trash a thing every turn. And that deck was like okay in like the lower value, the lower like econ world that it came out in. It was never the best deck. And basically, this represents sort of a way where you can just actually permanently stick DLR. And so people quickly start experimenting with various milling packages after this with the Fuckboy Starter Pack. Then Paparazzi gives you a pretty good way to not die to meat damage, which is traditionally one of the big weaknesses of Tag Me decks. Next up is another Siphon Enabler, DDoS. Basically, probably the biggest usage this will see is for enabling Siphon Cheese decks, where basically, hey, you didn't draw enough ice and I siphoned you. And it's pretty dumb in that regard, and also messes up sort of siphon dodging math, which is a pretty big deal. The other thing it did is combined with Hyperdriver and named a deck called Diaper, which is a terrible named deck that was primarily run by Rotage, who's runs it and is known for running it for like a significant chunk of time. Basically, you use False Echo plus DDoS to and Hyperdriver to pop all the ice off of R&D, and then you keyhole like 9 to 10 times in a turn, and score enough points and win. And it's like reasonably strong. It has some weaknesses. But it's kind of one of the better pure, it's probably the best pure runner combo deck that's going to exist in Netrunner. And last up is Drug Dealer, which is kind of an interesting card that sort of people see it has value, but don't really know how to play it right away. I remember people just trying to get Drug Dealer value and like Crim. And the big thing is sort of like the card is better than the credit, but it's not that much better, and so unless you can sort of dodge the credit thing, it's not an amazing card. And then we get to Data and Destiny, the big box. So this is a huge deal at the time, and it's coming out. MBN has probably been the best faction a higher percentage of time than any other faction. It's close between HB and MBN, who has been, they're both sort of been the two factions that have been taking the most top placements over the course of Netrunner up until this point. And so, you know, the assumption is that they can dial on a criminal or HB big box treatment where they sort of give them mostly like mediocre cards and maybe like one or two things like a horizontal direction, but mostly just sort of don't push the faction more. What we get is probably the single most powerful big box of all time with the most cards. So first off, is 15 minutes, which is just... I don't... This card is just totally broken. Two ones are already kind of just broken. And this is like a 2-1 your opponent can kind of never steal. And it's like a testament to how busted MBN is that 15 minutes is not used in every deck pre-rotation. You know, because you have Breaking News, which is totally busted. You have Astro, which is totally busted. But this card, even though it's limit one, it just... And it immediately goes in NEH Fast Advance. And then it also enables, like, you can play 4 2-1s, which is pretty good. Then there's News Team, which is kind of just really good. It ends up not seeing a ton of play past a certain point in Netrunner because they print enough good sacrifice agenda cards that it is just a huge vulnerability to play, as well as the main thing it fits in isn't that great. But it's I remember playing at the time, and just like, especially against Harp, you'd like run Archives and you'd steal like 1 point and get -2 points, or like have to deal with 4 tags, and it was just like, it was brutal. Then they just have a bunch of insane eyes. They have Archangel, which basically gives you medium protection, as well as just has a very good res to strength ratio, in terms of, and like the ability is like generally pretty relevant. You know, it's a mild face check penalty. The only thing that really breaks it that well is David, which isn't the worst. You know, and you're pretty good against Yogg. It's 5 to break with Gordian Blade, which is nuts. It's 3 against Cyber Cipher. There's no real good way to deal with Archangel. And you know, especially like, you can't even use a Data Sucker on it if you hit it out of R&D, so it's a pretty good counter to medium, which is one of the strongest ways to win a game. Then you got Resistor, which is the first 0 res soft end the run ice, and is very good. I think it sees play pretty quickly. I think some people mostly stick on Wall Static, but I think some people play it in MBN. Then they have Turnpike, which is the very good value ice. If you have any sort of tag punishment, it works pretty well. Then we get into some kind of stupid events. You have 24/7 News Cycle, which is just... It should never really been printed. It does a bunch of dumb stuff. Basically, the biggest thing it does is it combos with Breaking News to let you kill them with Scorch, which is like pretty... You know, you don't need to do much beyond that. It's like, it's gonna basically see play until Breaking News rotates, because the ability to just assemble, you know, you score a Breaking News, you Fast Advance for 15 minutes, and now you can win the game at any time, you know, as soon as you get 3 cards in your hands. Next up is All Seeing Eye, which is basically, it's a hate card for DLR. It's not great against Kate, which kind of limits it a little bit, but it's very good against Regis Anarch. Regis Anarch isn't like the main thing you want to beat, basically, in terms of like Breaking News punishment. But you know, with the Fuckboy starter pack and DLR, some people are like playing it as like a hate card. Some people are even splashing it, but it's a pretty relevant card when tagging MBN becomes good later in Netrunner. And then finally, the neutral card, Global Food Initiative, is probably the most important and best card in this pack. I would put it as like the 3rd best corp card of all time, behind Breaking News and Astrobiotics. I think there's an argument whether Caprice Nisse or GFI is better, but I think GFI is just pretty much the best. Gens are kind of just the most important card type in Netrunner, because you have to have them, and they having an agenda that does something for your deck is a huge improvement over having a dead card. And they're just sort of the things that most tightly define what you're able to do. And Global Food just sort of totally changes the balance of the game, and is like a huge buff to Glacier decks, and especially... Notably, you know, sort of TFP Glacier was like the main thing you could run before this. People were running Blue Sun, but it was kind of always had the prior rec problem. And this kind of immediately goes into everything and is a huge buff. Runner side, we get the mini factions, which are pretty uninteresting from a competitive standpoint. I think they're like fine as a thing to do. The problem I have with the mini factions is basically that because you only have like 7 or 8 in faction cards, for a mini faction to be good, you kind of need all those cards to be good. And so all those cards, like when you build a mini faction deck, you have a bunch of cards you need to include because otherwise it doesn't make sense to be building a mini faction deck. You know, if you're like, oh, if like those cards aren't good. And so you're kind of just like immediately, and it's not even like from like a actual perspective of like, hey, some of those are going to be duds, some of them are going to be good. Just kind of the thing where like every deck in a mini faction ends up being the same because they're all built around the same core parts, as opposed to like the other factions where you have like hundreds of cards you're choosing from and you can mix and match different combinations. And even if it's a power card, like you can combine it with other things. And so I think they're more of like a single puzzle someone has to solve, which is tends to not be as interesting competitively, but I think they're like cool and like it's people like them. And not everything has to make me happy. And I think the Atom is probably the most flexible and interesting of them, and it's probably the one that performs the best over time of the three of them. The Sunny has my favorite flavor. I was just like, hey, I'm just a person who does this for my job. And outside of that, there's like two pretty important cards that come here. One is Apoc, which people immediately start to like be like, wow, this is wild. And discover like, wow, every other Apex card sucks. Maybe we should play this in a different faction. People try various stuff, but mostly it's considered kind of janky. And the other one is E-Strike, which is pretty underrated at the time, though some people were playing it. It was kind of in that environment, sort of there was a ton of fast advance, and it was pretty bad against any age because they tended to be able to score whenever they wanted. And so you're basically just tempoing yourself for the most part. It was fine against ETF, though again, tended to be fast advanced, so a lot of times it wasn't great. It was amazing against RP, and it was very good against a ton of fringe stuff at the time, like Blue Sun, it was a blowout. But really doesn't slot into like Kate that well, and isn't that great at the time. And so after this, there's like a couple of nationals, but the most important tournament that happens is called the Psy Games. The Psy Games are basically another StimHack and NAO Perceive run tournament where basically all the regional winners can enter, and they do, having learned their lesson from the like tournament that took too long for the Store Championship Invitational, they run just a straight double elimination tournament, which turns out to be a pretty terrible format. Basically the person who gets the winners plays like 5 or 6 games, and the person who gets there from losers plays like 11 or 12. And the person who gets there from winner basically just like has like 3 hours between games also. And I think this is like sort of the pre runner up to world. So there's a lot of talk about people hiding their tech or not, but some people are taking it pretty seriously. Some people aren't. And like, it's a reasonably competitive tournament, even if like no one's breaking out like the hottest stuff they might be working on. And so the winner is Alex White, the UK national champion, who wins with Faster on Kate, and which is like very in line with what we've seen before. And then on the second place deck, which is maybe like arguably more important, is Harpsichord. So Dan's been playing this deck a bunch on stream at this point. Max Asandie had made the original deck. Max is a lesser known figure in Netrunner, though was anyone who was involved in StimHack Subterfuge remembers Max, because he was just legendary for just being incredibly belligerent. And in Subterfuge's game, where you like basically are controlling a bunch of submarine bases and send attacks, and you just be like, he was just incredibly belligerent and would always like threatening people to attack him, just very paranoid. There's Maxbot is his legacy, so if you exclamation point Maxbot, you'll get some quote of like paranoid Cold War dictator, which was how he played Subterfuge, which was a pretty funny thing. But anyway, Dan had been playing the stream a bunch and thought it was pretty good. And so Kukuba from the Philippines came in second, and you know, he won a ton of games and was just crushing people with it. And sort of then everyone was like, oh wow, this deck must be real. And sort of and I think there's like another cool thing beyond this deck like being real, is that Dan was like playing the decks he thought might be good on his stream and sharing it with people, and that's a lot of how things spread. And then the other, I think, big thing to note is that MBN is the dominant faction. The top placing MBN deck, or the top placing deck that wasn't MBN, was in seventh, was an HB Glacier deck called Classic HB by B Blum, which is basically ended up being called Food because it's basically the old taxing red coats, except you are playing Food, which is a huge power buff, and that's what makes it good. And you basically, you play Breaker Bay Grid with the Acid Econ, and the Adonis Campaign and Eve Campaign, and then you build into a Caprice, and you play like ABTs and NAPD and 2 GFI and a Vitruvius. And you play like all the good Byroid Ice, and it's a pretty good deck. So I did a little bit of research about this. I think the first person to post a deck I would describe as basically food coats was Elad David Amir, who posted like basically a Breaker Bay Glacier deck immediately after Breaker Bay was released, with a Caprice and I think it was 2 Caprices, and then he later swapped them out for a Batty, which was a terrible idea. But he was running Next Ice instead. But it was basically the core idea of the deck. But you didn't have the GFI yet, which is really what pushed this deck to a competitive level. And so there, you know, it's like B-Blum basically hypes this up as like the... Yeah, and so there's a reasonable amount of hype about that. So like there's three takeaways from the side games were basically... MBN is probably the best faction. Harpsichord is a real deck. And maybe this food codes deck is worth looking into. And also the UK is for real, having won this tournament. And also people were very excited about Kukupa winning from just like a community we never heard from. And he ended up traveling to Gen Con next year, and I met him and his brother, who were very nice. Yeah, so I'm going to do a quick summary of sort of everything I've talked about and like what is the run up to Worlds. So tier one is basically... RP and NEH were the best decks for most of the year. Throughout the year, HB Fast Advance, HB Good Stuff were okay for a lot of a year, but never like sort of the best thing. And then Harpsichord has emerged as the new good deck. Additionally, GFI is like a power card that everyone recognizes gives a lot of power to like non-RP Glacier. And so there's a lot of people trying to think of like maybe Bootcamp Glacier is good now because of this. On the runner side, Kate is the best deck for all of the year. Noise has become very strong, and I think it's just like the second best deck. Regas Anarch has emerged, but is not the best deck. You know, there's the Max variant, there's the Elforjab variant. Siphon Ear Max is better than Anatomy Anarch, but it doesn't really have any amazing results. Those sort of Siphon DLR is possibly a good deck. And there's a, like, it wins the RPC finals in the Atlantic Coast one, which is a pretty impressive win considering, like, I think Dan attended and a couple of other top Worlds placements. Attended, and it was, you know, there was a Val Siphon DLR deck built by Jonas, aka the Big Unit, which is, I'm pretty sure, a Randy Johnson reference. And yeah, and so sort of Andy has basically disappeared by the end of the year, has really just like fallen out of the meta, has trouble beating RP, it's not amazing against NEH, and it just doesn't have a strong, isn't where it was before. And so that's kind of the meta going into Worlds. And I'll talk about Worlds next. I'll start going over the decks and what we see in Worlds next episode. And if you don't know the results, I guess you can play a fun game or something about, like, what do I think of all this? What I think will do well? I don't know how you'd actually do this. If you somehow, like, know all the cards I'm talking about but weren't playing then or something, I don't know, man. Do what you want. And then I think the other big thing that emerged this year was the Stim Hack Slack. So basically, in 2014, my understanding of things is that there were a bunch of, like, small Stim Hack Skype channels, like 25-ish people or something. And at the beginning of, like, 2015, you know, they're kind of, like, friends, people who had been around there longer. And then beginning at 2015, I think, like, 4 or 5 months in, Dan decided to create, like, a public Skype chat for everyone to join in. Skype is beyond awful. It's just, like, not a great program. It doesn't really work. And Dodge Pong was, like, constantly like, hey, guys, Slack, why are we using Skype? This is terrible. Can we move to Slack? We use it for work. It's really nice. And at some point, I think it was, like, 1 or 2 months before Worlds, he made the Slack and people started moving to it. And I remember Dan was refusing to move, insisting that Skype was great. You know, it was, like, unusable. Like, I would come home and I would just, like, freeze up, and I would, like, not see all the messages from the previous day. And I think when Worlds happened, there were around 100 people on Slack. Though over the course of Worlds, people, like, basically it massively expanded because people discovered it was really convenient to have this thing to, like, message people, like, hey, we're going to get food or whatever. And sort of, I would describe the core ideology of the original Stim Hack Slack and Skype was best stated by B. Blum, who basically said, it's a place where you can tell someone their deck is bad. This was not supposed to be, like, the Netrunner community. This was supposed to, it was, like, originally supposed to be a place where a bunch of the people who are most serious about getting better and winning would converge, and a lot of, like, the early general discussion was heavily focused toward, like, the small elite. And, you know, there was originally just Skype, which was one channel, and it was, like, the most competitive people who were the most into just talking about this game all the time, and, you know, with the main focus being getting better and better and sort of figuring out what was good. And part of figuring out what is good is also means figuring out what is bad and what is not working. And I think this was, like, it was a very competitive focused place in a way it ended up not at, though the competitive focus was kind of always there. And largely because it was, like, the preferred platform of people who like to talk about it a lot. But sort of over time, it got merged into a general community hub, and sort of there was often disagreements about, like, the competitive nature of it and people not liking that people would tell their deck ideas bad, which I think is an interesting thing to talk about. There's also just a ton of shit posting. There's just every day at lunch people would talk about pizza, and then all sorts of shit. It was, like, not really moderated in a way Slack is now, which was mostly pretty bad. It was, moderation's, like, pretty good and definitely makes things better. There's I think the biggest recurrent argument, as Kate was basically the dominant deck of the day, was about Proko and Kate. You know, where there was a faction that thought you should run Proko and Kate, which was the Brits and a couple of Americans. And then there was a faction that thought you shouldn't, and you just need to go as fast as possible to beat NEH, which was kind of led by a loud Belgian man named Klimsha, as well as, I think it was generally the American consensus that Proko was not it, though
It wasn't a monolith. And it was a great place to get better, but a lot of people found it overwhelming. You know, I went online, it's like forum culture, when I was like 15. And I kind of like grew up in like shit posting and just like the way in which like digital spaces operate. And I know a lot of people who didn't. But I have like fond memories of that point in time, though there's a lot of things that got better about Slack over time. And I think general was just, Slack used to be just general at one point. But though that quickly like fractured as you get bigger and bigger, in which it basically can't sustain different goals and belief systems about what Slack should be and what narrow discussion is about all in one place. But yeah, Slack ended up drastically changing the future of Netrunner in a lot of ways. I think the biggest thing is just, I think within like a year or two, it just cannibalized the forums, because basically the StimHack forums, because basically everyone who was engaging there in the competitive community moved to Slack, which was good in some ways because it was a really, like, one of the big things it did is it made a lot of like the best players accessible, and you could get like, hey, like, what do people think about this, or like, how do I get better? And like, you know, ton of people who had won a bunch of regionals or nationals would be like, here's how, or like, hey, like, there was even like a ton of people would be like, hey, you could just be like, hey, I have questions about how to make my deck better, or I don't understand how this deck works, and sort of someone would answer you, and that was like a great aspect of it. But it also just sort of became less visible and had less of a permanent record. You also need to be willing to like put yourself out there and ask for help. And I remember people being like, hey, I think this card might be good. And then someone would be like, that card sucks. And you know, a lot of people were like put back by that, especially like after the very, you know, at the very start, it was just like, it was a bunch of people who like all understood we were just like trying to narrow down to the best stuff possible. And then like, it slowly morphed into a place where like everyone went to just talk about Netrunner who liked Netrunner, which wasn't just competitive people, and I think there was a lot of growing pains around that. But yeah, so that's a lot of the run up to Worlds. Covered a lot of the meta. I'll start with the top 16 next week. Do the same format, 16-8. 8-1, and then I have a couple special treats, which is I got some all-time scoops. So way back when, Dan sent me a rough draft of his 2015 Worlds report. So I'm gonna read some excerpts of that at some point. So we all got that to look forward to. You know, it was unedited. It was pretty good. It was pretty funny. I'll probably cut out a lot of stuff about actually playing Netrunner, which no one cares about, and just stick with the Danisms. But yeah, and as always, if you have any questions, message me. If you have any complaints, don't.